introverted noise.
Hurry up, Daddy.
Let's do it.
5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it
this.
To Mo Williams. Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
All right, and welcome back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket Podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason. Streak is over, but it's all good. We gonna push through. We got QB1. We got Saxy Prince. Miles is off attending to some business. So we gonna jump right into this thing. QB1, my man, how you doing? How you been?
I'm good, man. The Vikings on a win streak, so all is well this way.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Loving it. Loving it. Love it. Saxy Prince. New saxophone arrived in the mail. How are things going on your end? Have you been able to take it for a test drive yet?
Yeah, man. Saxy Prince just got a little saxier. Sax family has extended. We added a third baby to the group. So now we got a little trio going. I did get a test drive. It was fantastic. Much bigger sound of the kind of that lead saxophone sound that I've kind of been searching for. Going to still switch up some equipment and whatnot, just get it to that optimal level, get it adjusted a little bit. But yeah, man, it's exactly what I needed.
Yes, sir. That's what we like. And I guess, now that you got this new stuff, you already said you're getting some new equipment set up. We will be on the lookout for some new music, maybe some new YouTube, a little something from you as we get here. Maybe for the bye, you can drop some new music for us.
Help everyone relax
through the bye week there.
Yeah, gotta have some sexy sax tunes coming out or something pretty
there
soon.
We go. But. Or we can, get that real synergy going on. You can lay down an album of slow jams that we will use with JR doing a voiceover, teaching people how he uses the power of slow jams to help him watch film. And then we'll sell it on climbingthepocket.com.
Yeah, man. Let's do it.
There we go. There we go. Business ideas coming to light here on the pod. Well, let's get to it. It's earlier than usual, but strangely a somewhat active time in the NFL. And I think maybe this hopefully will be a trend. Last year was a fairly hectic trade deadline. And this year, things seem to be getting started a little bit earlier. We got Snacks going to the Lions. We got Eli Apple going to the Saints. Amari Cooper to the Cowboys. Carlos Hyde to the Jags. Yeah, JR, I guess from your perspective, which of these moves is the biggest, and kind of what other moves are you expecting to maybe happen between now and the trade deadline?
Well, obviously the biggest one is Amari Cooper to the Cowboys. That's the one that made the biggest waves because it was the most conversation tied to it. The Cowboys desperately needed another weapon out on the perimeter, so they paid a hefty price for Amari Cooper. Basically, they felt as if there wasn't a receiver in this draft that they felt had the same talent or be up to par like Amari Cooper is to this point. And I kind of agree with him. It's kind of a down wide receiver class for the most part. They're not going to get a guy that is already Amari Cooper's age with the experience that he already has and the production that he has at such an early age. He's still only 24 years old. Yes, he's had an up and down career, but he's been a top five pick and he's had some early production in his career, but it's declined a bit the past few years for whatever reason. There's been a lot of variables and a lot of various reasons that's contributed to that. But overall, I think it was a good trade for the Cowboys, but the jury is still out on it right now. And we'll see how he ends up meshing with Dak and that Cowboys offense.
Yeah. And so that's something that, I want to get your take on, but I also want to get Prince to jump in on this one as well, is this idea that the Cowboys know they need a receiver, had planned on taking one in the first round. So who cares if they gave a first round pick for Amari Cooper? I mean, isn't it kind of early to be locking yourself into a singular position in the first round of the draft before we know who's even coming out, what the depth is going to look like, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? Like, I get the spin on, Amari Cooper, and yeah, his profile coming out was great. He has a ton of production early on. But I mean, I guess this idea of, well, they were going to pick a receiver in the first anyway, that seems a little flawed to me. I guess, JR, someone who follows the draft the way that you do, I guess, what are your thoughts on that justification for a trade like this?
I won't say it's flawed, but I'll say they did kind of lock themselves into a bit of a closet a little bit. Everyone knows that they were going to take a receiver early, maybe not necessarily in the first round, but within the first, second, or third round, and they felt like no receiver in this draft was up to Amari Cooper's talent. So they just went ahead and burned that draft pick on Amari Cooper, and they're essentially saying that our first-round pick this year, we already have our receiver. We can go ahead and get him in-house. And also, they're going to give Dak Prescott every chance in the world to prove that he can be the guy going forward, because he is up for an extension after this year, and who knows where it will go if he continues to disappoint this year. But they seem to believe in Dak. Jerry Jones is a huge believer in Dak, and they want to set him up to succeed as best as possible by giving him the best option as possible, and that's what they're trying to do with Amari Cooper.
Hey, no, I can't be mad at him for that, because we do know how important wide receivers are to the success of a quarterback. Saxy Prince, from your perspective, obviously Amari Cooper is one that's making a ton of waves. Of any of the other trades that were announced, anything that really jumped out to you, any other ones of the trades that have kind of happened, or the big ones that have already been announced that you think are going to be, you know, a big deal as the season continues to play itself out?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Lions traded for, remind me his name, defensive tackle.
Snacks.
Yeah, Snacks. Exactly.
David Harrison.
Yeah. The fact that the Lions already kind of had a pretty solid interior defensive line, and you trade for another guy like that of that caliber, just kind of shows that I think teams are really putting emphasis on that, you know, interior defensive line to really cause problems for some of these quarterbacks who are, you know, they're younger, they're more mobile. But then you get a lot of fresh interior linemen who aren't having to constantly eat up these double teams all the time, and you're giving them really, they're getting them fresh. So that one stood out to me because, in my opinion, now in the NFC North, you have probably three of the top five defensive tackles in the division. And it just kind of goes to show you like how important that teams are putting in as far as the emphasis on that interior defensive line. So I thought it was a fantastic move for the Lions, and they didn't really pay all that much for him anyway. So that was the one that stood out to me the most.
That's fair. I'm surprised you didn't go with the Jacksonville Jaguars adding their third generational talent at running back in like 4 years or something. That's got to be something that makes you happy. No?
I mean, no? I'm always for team pay, Ryan.
Shout out to Dr. Eric Eager. I lifted that from him, from one of his write-ups this week. I just thought it was funny. You know, these generational talents, they seem to be growing on trees at that old running back position there. So we'll see how Carlos does in Duval. All right. We talked about Snacks, and you know, he was traded away. Amari Cooper also traded away from teams that are going to be really bad. And so I felt like, you know, before we jump into our stuff here, and this is something I know that JR, I know you really wanted to get into as well, talking about how these teams are going about their rebuild. So in both instances, I guess maybe a little bit different, looks like, you know, with the Raiders, you had McKenzie in there where it looked like they kind of had already started the rebuild or had a core in place where, you know, they had the offensive line. They had their quarterback. They had their star wide receiver. Looked like they were kind of building that team out and had already rebuilt and looked to have a positive direction going. And they just needed to shore up their defense. Obviously, Gruden has come in and has very different ideas about what the Raiders are, what they need to be. And so he is doing a teardown on the fly. The Giants, on the other hand, again, they seem to think they were good going into this season. They seem to still think Eli had something left in the tank, and now kind of on the fly are realizing Eli is not good. Our team is not good. And so they're kind of having a fire sale, getting everybody they can up out of there. And, you know, there's some whispers, some rumors about, you know, basically everyone, I think Patrick Peterson, except for Patrick Peterson, everyone from the Cardinals kind of being available. And so I guess, yeah, JR, what are your thoughts on this? Because I know that over time we've had different differences of opinions on how teams really should go about rebuilding in the NFL. And I guess, what are your thoughts on kind of this Sashi Brown-ish, Cleveland Browns type approach where you just, you know, basically burn it to the ground and start over?
Well, let's just talk about first the both of the teams that we're talking about, and the Giants and the Raiders. I think both of them are two different cases, and what I mean by that is Dave Gettleman came in and established that he wanted to win right away with this roster, which I thought was a huge mistake by him and a total lack of self-awareness. And what I mean by self-awareness, meaning is that he didn't recognize the type of team that he had and the quarterback that he did have. He's been over the hill for a while. Eli Manning hasn't been very good for a while. That's something me and Jason have talked about a lot. And they should have drafted their quarterback, number two overall. And he made some very questionable moves. Nate Solder giving him all that money, trading for Alec Ogletree, which I thought was another mistake that he made. And he made all these transactions during the year in hopes of trying to win right now, which I thought was a total lack of self-awareness. He didn't recognize the type of team, the type of job that he was walking into. It was a team that really needed to be gutted from top to bottom, in my opinion, just because they were built around Eli Manning. And that's something that wasn't sustainable over time because he's not that type of quarterback anymore. And they needed to have a future plan in place and use Eli as that bridge guy, or just get rid of Eli completely, because he hamstrings that offense a lot. And what he did was this entire offseason, he tried to set up and build around Eli Manning with a ground and pound running game with Saquon Barkley, bringing in Nate Solder to protect his blind side, and even drafting a guy like Will Hernandez to give more protection for Eli, to prove to everybody that Eli had another year and he was going to build up this defense by bringing in Alec Ogletree and some other guys as well. So that was mistake number one. Mistake number two, obviously, was drafting Saquon Barkley, number two overall, and now they're stuck with all these fancy weapons on the perimeter with no quarterback to get them the ball. So it was a total lack of self-awareness with the Giants. I think that's the biggest mistake that Dave Gettleman has made. And now he's recognizing that he has the self-awareness now to get rid of these pieces. And he's already started to have the fire sale, getting rid of Damon Snacks Harrison. So he's starting to realize exactly what he needs to do, and not necessarily tear it down to the ground, but just trade some of those bad contracts that they do have and older veterans that they do have still on the roster as well. I probably will go ahead and predict that they do get rid of Janoris Jenkins next, and we'll see what happens with Olivier Vernon. I don't think they'll get rid of Landon Collins because they're probably clearing some space in order to pay him this offseason. So now let's talk about the Raiders, and I think they're the biggest team that's in flux right now across the entire NFL. Now, I thought the Raiders could be competitive this year, and they didn't go into the year thinking that they were going to totally tear it down and rebuild. But something that you have to understand about NFL coaches is that it's a real pride thing with them. And when they take over a job, they want to get their own guys in there. They don't want to have their names associated with the previous guys that the previous regime drafted or signed with that team. And that's what we're seeing with John Gruden right now. He has the job security and he has the long-term tenure with that 10-year contract to be able to bring in his own guys. That's why he's accumulating all these draft picks. So over time, he wants to get guys in the building that are John Gruden guys. So that's what we're seeing with both of those teams. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that they have to burn it all to the ground, but I like what the Raiders are doing, getting rid of those pieces and bringing their own guys in. That's not necessarily saying that John Gruden is doing it the right way, but he quickly recognized that this team is not competitive, and he just completely gutted the roster.
Can I hop in actually about the Gruden thing? Because I think it's an interesting conversation specifically about Gruden. So obviously we make fun of the fact that Gruden got this 10-year contract coming in, really has a lot of, you know, say of what's happening. But I think, you know, I think what Gruden, when he came in, I think he really saw this project that is the Oakland Raiders as being a much larger project than how we typically think about things. Typically how we think about things is like, it's kind of like when Mike Zimmer came in with Rick Spielman, obviously. Zimmer knew that it was going to take 2 or 3 years before the Vikings defense was really competing and this team was really on the rise to being that team that it could be and having sustainable success. Now, obviously, when we think about rebuilds, we obviously think about them in chunks of maybe 3 or 4 years, right? Whereas I think Gruden is probably thinking about things a little bit differently, in which he probably think about that 10 years and how he sold it is like, yo, it's going to take me 7 or 8. Not only are we going to be rebuilding, but we're also going to be moving. So obviously in these first couple of years, you know, not having a home next year and not moving to Las Vegas, I can't really recruit guys. I can't really bring guys in the way that I would be, you know, if we're going to be still playing in Oakland. You know, I can sell the facilities, I can do all the other stuff. So it's going to take me a few years to be able to do that. And then on top of that, I have to, you know, guys' contracts are going to be running out. Then I need to rebuild the rebuild that I've already started. So I think Gruden really thought of this as probably a you know, 6, 7, 8 year plan. And really, you're going to start seeing, you know, the maturations of his fruit, I guess, in those latter years, which is why I know we're making fun of him right now, but maybe that's how he sees it.
I don't know, Prince. I guess the one question I have about that is, and maybe that's where it is. I guess Prince, you can jump in, or JR, if you have a take on this, by all means, feel free to jump in. Help me understand then, I guess, why bring in so many old guys if that's kind of what we're trying to do? Because it seemed initially like a lot of what the Raiders were doing before Gruden, like signing Beast Mode and doing things like that, was really about trying to keep people still excited about things because they were leaving and then they would be moving. And so it was to, like, you know, keep fans, you know, connected to what they were doing. But then you have Gruden come in and just start signing every old guy in the league. And I'm trying to understand, like, if you're thinking on the longer term, why are you signing all those old people?
Yeah, no, I don't necessarily agree with what he's doing. But I definitely think that's probably how he sold himself to the organization to get that 10-year project. And it probably made sense. Like, oh, yeah, but we obviously know within the NFL people are heavily impatient. I don't know why he's bringing in all the older vets and stuff. To be completely honest, with 3 first round picks going into this year with $74 million in cap space, I mean, he has firepower that honestly you could turn around a roster pretty quickly. You know, even if you hit on 2 of those 3 first round picks and then you hit on, you know, some of those mid round picks and or the second or third round picks, like, you can retool a roster very, very fast. But I don't necessarily have the confidence that he will do that. Maybe his plan is bring in some of the older vets, establish some semblance of a culture, and then obviously these new guys that come in, you can maintain the culture through, you know, moving to Las Vegas and whatnot. So maybe that's his thing. Not necessarily bringing them in for the talent, but just for the fact that they might buy in and they'll help younger players buy in. But like I said, I think Gruden's long. He's playing the long game and the really, really long game. I don't know if he'll make it to obviously the end of his tenure, which obviously could potentially set back the Raiders even further back than they already are.
Yeah, and just to piggyback off of that, I hate to compare across sports, but I compare what Gruden did to kind of what the Lakers did this year, and they signed a bunch of older guys just to be placeholders for this year, just to get him through this year to eventually bring in his own guys, like the Lakers brought in Rondo, JaVale McGee, and players of that sort. The list goes on and on, Lance Stevenson and guys like that. It's similar to what Gruden did, bringing in Jordan Nelson and a bunch of other older guys as well, just to be those placeholders to get him through this rough phase or this rough patch to eventually bring in his own guys and get the team to Vegas to where now he could build up that roster.
Okay. So I guess, you know, and to be fair, you know, Gruden, yeah, like the trading of Mac, most of us are looking at it right now while, you know, they're saying they need more pass rush and Mac is balling out in Chicago. But yeah, that was a longer term type of decision. So both of you have kind of, you know, made reference to that. JR, I'll start with you. If you were laying, you know, odds or percentages or whatever it was that we'll just give him the full 10 years, that within the time that Gruden is there calling the shots, making the decisions, we won't do the odds. We'll say, what is the furthest you see the Raiders going, like, in the playoffs during his tenure?
I would say they could win one playoff game. I'm just not a huge fan of John Gruden as a whole. I never have been. Even when he was in Tampa, I thought he won with a roster that wasn't his. He never constructed that roster. He just came in and just stayed out the way. And what I mean by stay out the way is that he just kept the ship afloat. The Ferrari was already there. All he had to do was keep it on the highway and keep it in between the lanes. He didn't do anything, or he didn't take the Ferrari to the shop or get it fixed or anything like that. It was already fresh off the lot for him, and he just had to stay out the way and keep it on course. So I've never been a huge fan of John Gruden as an executive or as a head coach. So we'll see how it does end up, but I don't expect much.
Okay. So one playoff game. So like you just don't see them getting past like the second round of the playoffs is basically like, or is it just one playoff game period in the 10 years?
I just don't see him winning more than one playoff game.
Oh boy, Sexy Prince, what about you? What are your thoughts in the 10 years he's going to be there? What is the furthest they get, or how much success are they going to have playoff-wise?
Yeah, I think, honestly, I think they're going to, I'm kind of with JR in a sense, but I think they're probably going to be really similar to the Giants in a sense. I think there's probably going to be a year where they're going to look very, very good. Like they're going to be unstoppable, and then they'll get to the playoffs. So it probably gets the NFC Championship. And then they'll just completely crumble. Like, I think they'll just get blown out in the NFC Championship.
They're in the AFC,
AFC Championship.
Also, who's going to be quarterbacking this team? Because Derek Carr is not good.
Yeah, it's not going to be Derek Carr. It's going to be some – it's either going to be some, like, really grizzly vet who is on his last leg and then he wills them to, you know, high volatility type year where he's just playing lights out for – their Case Keenum-like or whatever the case is. I can see that happening in probably like year like 4 or 5. And that's going to be the year that Gruden's going to be on the hot seat because they're going to be playing so poorly. And then that'll restore some kind of confidence. Like, oh, well, maybe it is coming together. And then they're just going to be bad for the rest of the season.
Fitz magic in Vegas.
Right? I'm saying.
Fitz magic is going to come back in at like 52 and have like one last season of brilliance in him. And then implode in the playoffs in the first round.
Because Gruden will try to convince Kurt Warner to come back.
Oh, God. All right. So generally speaking, just to pull it away from these teams specifically, because I know it's something we've talked about before. You know, I wrote something about it. Back when we were on, what was it? I don't hate Sam Bradford.com about kind of NFL teams selling hope. And I know, Prince, that you said, you know, one of the reasons that teams don't tear it down the way these teams look to be is that, you know, it's hard to sell your fans on, you know, hope if you have no good players. So JR, I feel like you agree with the idea of maybe taking these teams that don't have a lot of talent and just, you know, maxing out your shots in the draft, building it up, and then maybe adding vets once you start to have a direction. I guess, what are your thoughts on how in these particular situations, these markets, like how this is going to sell with the fan bases?
Well, I think you have to do like what a lot of Major League Baseball general managers do, and you have to make fans aware of exactly what you're trying to do. And that means they have to understand that you're going through a rebuild phase and try to sell hope 2 to 3 years down the road from now. And that's something that Sashi Brown did in his initial press conference with the Cleveland Browns. He said, just understand that this is a 3 to 4 year rebuild. And obviously it only gave him 2 years, but that's the first thing that he said in his initial press conference. He said, when he took over, we have our approach, we have our process, exactly what we're going to do, we know what we're going to implement, and we just want the organization from top to bottom and the fan base to understand that this is a 3 to 4 year process. And all NFL fans have hope. We all know that NFL is the ultimate sell or the ultimate league of selling hope. Every fan base is going to have hope of winning the Super Bowl prior to the year, but as that year goes on, and by midseason, most fan bases realize that they don't have a shot at the playoffs. And the ultimate sell of hope is the NFL draft. That's something every NFL fan looks to that has a losing team right now. And a prime example of that right now is the New York Giants. The New York Giants are 1-6 right now, I believe. And they're already talking about getting Justin Herbert, who is the quarterback from Oregon. So NFL fans are always going to have hope, whether that's during the season, prior to the season, or the NFL draft. So you just have to come in and implement a certain plan that you have and let fans know and make them aware of exactly what you're trying to do.
Okay. All right. Good luck to Gettleman selling that in New York. That media, they're a bit ruthless over there. But yeah, I guess that's the way to do it. And you know, speaking of Super Bowls, you know, we're back on track, like you guys said before. We're streaking here, and yeah, we've righted the ship, maybe. Maybe not. I guess we'll talk about that a little bit here. And so let's talk about our Vikings, because, you know, even though things have been a little up and down and, you know, lost some games, coaches were on hot seats, defense was bad, the defense seems to be getting its footing a little bit. And, you know, on paper, we blew out a bad team in the New York Jets. So, Sexy Prince, I'll start with you on this one, and then we'll bring it back to JR for his analysis on things in this game. What were your general thoughts, kind of high-level thoughts on the Jets game, how the Vikings played, what your thoughts were from the offense, defense, at a high level?
Yeah, I think you know, the Vikings defense is obviously really starting to click. And we're really seeing the defense that we thought we were going to see. I know, Jason, you and I have had multiple conversations offline where we knew that defenses are sticky. We knew that they struggle to maintain their, you know, their high level play each and every year, even at the fact that we haven't really had that many additions to this defense. I mean, it's still majority of the same core: Rhodes, Smith, Linval, you know, obviously without Everson, but Hunter, you have those, Barr and Kendricks, you have those guys who are mostly core and they know the system and stuff. So it was surprising to see them struggle so much. In this game, I saw the defense playing at the high level. Offense, I think it is still quite inconsistent more often than not. And it's a little bit frustrating because you can tell once it's clicking, it's really clicking, and it's a pretty high level offense. What I am seeing, though, with the offense is the lack of explosive plays. In the Jets game, and I'm okay with admitting it was not Diggs' best game at all. The Vikings are missing the explosive plays. And not just plays, obviously, down the field, but just plays that generate, you know, 20 yards after the catch because of scheme and all the other stuff. So I think the Vikings are still really missing that, and they're going to need that key component, in the third and the fourth quarter of the season to really, in my opinion, to really truly compete. So I think the defense played really well. I think the offense still is a little bit inconsistent. And unfortunately, I think it wasn't really Darnold's fault, but I think his receivers and just overall weapons really let him down in this game. So kind of looking at it macro-wise, I knew the Vikings were going to win. They went in and they handled business, and it was not a super clean game, but I think a game that we can be proud of.
Yeah, and to that point that you're making about explosive plays, like if you go over to Sharp Football Stats, and I know, again, we talked about this probably offline early in the season, but you don't think about it because, you know, a lot of the talk around the team has been about, you know, the gaudy volume stats that are being put up by this team, be it by Kirk Cousins or Adam Thielen. And when you look at, you know, the explosive plays, especially the explosive pass plays on this team, you know, the Sam Bradford offense, which we often malign as kind of the dink and dunk offense, were ranked 14th in the league in explosive plays. The Case Keenum offense ranked 9th in explosive plays passing. And thus far, our rate of explosive plays in the Kirk Cousins offense is 29th in the league. So we're throwing a lot. Ooh. And we aren't getting a lot of big plays out of it. I'm in agreement with you. That's something that is going to need to be addressed as we move forward. And kind of to that point, when you look at Kirk Cousins' performance in this particular game, it wasn't his best game, and it was probably his second shaky game in a row against a less than stellar opponent. So JR, this is where I wanted you to hop in. Obviously, you're our QB guy around here. What are you seeing kind of in Kirk Cousins' game over these last couple where things seem a little shakier than we've come to expect from him based on what he was doing earlier in the season?
Yeah, the offense really didn't have much flow in this game, and I just really hated the way they were using Stephon Diggs throughout the game. I thought they had some mismatches on the outside, especially with them going against Morris Claiborne, with Tremaine Johnson out. I thought that was a matchup that they could exploit more often, but for some reason they just were trying to use him on a bunch of underneath routes and swing routes out of the backfield, which I thought was really odd. All you saw him was running a bunch of shallow crosses, screen plays, or just some quick slants of that sort. They rarely ever tested them down the field, whether that was from the slot or from the outside. They pick and chose their spots when they did test them down the field, and they actually had some success, even the closing touchdown to Aldrick Robinson at the end, Adam Thielen early on, and a couple other plays as well. But I thought they should have tested them more down the field, and his game plan really reminded me of the first three quarters against the Green Bay Packers early on in the season, just where they seemed to be timid. The running game was a bit shaky early on. Eventually, they started to bust through and got some good hits with Mike Boone and Latavius Murray as well. But I just thought the offense was very inconsistent. You would just like to see them test their defensive backs a bit more down the field. Now, that might be a product of John DeFilippo just not trusting his offense at that moment and point in time. But you would just like to see him be a bit more aggressive and pick and choose the spots a little bit more wisely when to take those shots down the field. So I think they're mismanaging Stephon Diggs a bit right now, and I just would like to see them test him or use him a little bit more down the field in a similar way that they're using Adam Thielen on the outside when they do try to go down the field with him.
Yeah, Jared, that's actually a good point. A point that I wanted to kind of piggyback off of. We've talked about it before, but I think we know that Stephon Diggs's utilization right now is probably pretty poor. Like when you compare how guys are kind of using some of their premier talent around the league, I would probably say Stephon Diggs ranks towards the top of kind of wrongful utilization. And I think what the issue is, and I'm not sure if I've mentioned it before, but I think what the issue is like in 2014, 2015, 2016, the Vikings had, they had that like explosive gadget player in Cordarrelle Patterson, right? And I think the fact that the Vikings haven't really found another player that is that explosive, that can really do a lot of the gimmicky gadget type plays, they've taken Stephon Diggs and they're now trying to stretch him across a few different positions. Instead of him just playing, just being the outside guy, being a guy who maybe rotates with Adam Thielen in the slot, now they're trying to make him into this outside guy plus a slot guy plus this, taking all the gadget plays and giving it to him, which I think is forcing him to do a lot of different things that I'm sure he's comfortable with, but doesn't necessarily allow him to, on a play that maybe he should be going down the field, well, he's staying closer to the line of scrimmage because, it's going to be some swing pass dump off that, Kirk Cousins needs if the protection breaks down. And It is a little frustrating because I've said it on the timeline. I think Stephon Diggs is our most explosive weapon. And that's not a knock against Adam Thielen. I think Adam Thielen is fantastic at the role that he's being asked to do. But the issue is I think eventually that's going to catch up to us offensively. And I know Jason said it offline, but having Diggs take a lot of those dink and ducks, the Jarvis Landry role is just not his game. He can make the most of it, but our offense seems to click on all cylinders when both Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs are really heavily influenced in the offense and not just the dink and dunk offense.
And I'm going to have to disagree with you on he can make the most of it, given that Latavius Murray averaged more yards per carry than Stephon Diggs averaged per reception in the Jets game. But ultimately it's one of those things where, and I know we're talking about it because that's one of the things that we're going to do. We're going to talk about things that we want to see be better going forward, but it's also not something that I'm staying away from the arguments in the timeline, because in the grand scheme, if teams want to shadow Diggs with their best, 61% of the time or whatever it was, I think that Luke Brown put on the timeline, and leave Adam Thielen matched up on linebackers and safeties and third and fourth, cornerbacks, and our offense can run through him and, he can kill teams that way, I'm perfectly okay with that. So long as, not that we're winning, but we're winning and the offense looks good when we're doing so. I think we're starting to hit the point now, though, where Adam Thielen's volume numbers and the numbers that he's putting up are maybe starting to distract us as a fan base, generally speaking, from what the offense is, or the offense in general is looking like, because it was not a great offensive performance. Kirk Cousins looked shaky, and like I alluded to, it's the second really game in a row where his performance hasn't been great. Like he had the lowest yards per attempt that he's had all season in that game against the Jets, and the wind, I'm sure, played a factor in that. But also against Arizona, again, he wasn't really sharp. It wasn't his best game. And so I think that some of the gimmicky, gadgety type things that DeFilippo was doing early in the season will eventually need to make way to us being able to just drop Kirk back or roll him out and have him dissect the defense quickly and make a throw and make some more throws, maybe a little bit further downfield to open things up, because we're going to need to be able to make those big plays as we start to play better teams. Probably, you know, starting this week when we get things in with the Saints. But
That's a fantastic point, Jason. And that's why it's really hard to engage in the nuance of, you know, the volume stats versus the analytical stats that people try to kind of engage in on Twitter or just social media in general, because it's really hard to convince someone when you're winning and when you're scoring more points, hey, you're really not playing that well. Kirk Cousins threw for over 300 yards and he threw for, you know, three touchdowns. Yeah, but like if you look at the context of which he did that in, it's like, oh, well, the defense had a really timely turnover, put him in perfect field position. And, you know, maybe there was a few broken plays where, you know, Adam Thielen was open, streaking down the field and he found him, which is important. But like when you look at like, OK, let's look at our base offense. Let's look at what we're doing between the 20s. Are we efficiently moving the football? Well, no, we're not doing that. You know, we are finding all these like spark miracle type plays, whereas like those are great in football and in sports in general. But it's like it's the teams who are really able to consistently win are the people who succeed in the areas of efficiency and some of those non-volume stats. More of like the stats that are based around per play and, you know, per series and per drive or per drive. And those are the things that I think we need to start seriously analyzing to see how well is this Viking team performing and stacking against competition, especially the fact we haven't played the Patriots. I think we're still going to face face the Packers again. I think this, you know, there are some teams that we still have left. Even the Saints, you know, coming this weekend, I think in aspects of it can give us a run for our money. So I just wanted to, again, piggyback off that point because I think it's a good one.
All right. Well, let's talk about, you know, something that went well. And yo, JR, is the running game back? Are we all the way back? Because this is consecutive games now where, you know, we were really able to get things going. Latavius Murray balling out. We got articles now, you know, talking about, you know, how he was a really wise investment. You know, previous game we had, Rock Thompson showing out. We had really all the running backs over the last couple of weeks are doing well, whereas, you know, early in the season obviously a running game was an embarrassment. Are we back or did we just play some bad teams?
I would say somewhat. I think a lot of the yards are coming from big gains to close out the games that happened against the Cardinals and also happened against the Jets, but throughout the game they're starting to get more positive yardage than what we've seen in previous games as well. I thought the Jets had a good defense for the most part, but I'm not sure exactly what the numbers say as far as what their run defense was. I know their offensive rushing attack was really good. I think it was like seventh or eighth throughout the league prior to last week, but I'm not sure exactly what their run defense was. But they have a pretty strong defense for the most part. That's just from the eye test. Like I said, I don't know what the statistics say to back that up, but I thought the ground game looked really good last week, but a lot of the yards are coming from chunk plays throughout the game. I know 40 yards of it came from Latavius Murray in the fourth quarter where he had the big game. But regardless, prior to that point, he had some good gains. Mike Boone had some good gains as well, and Rock Thomas as well. So it's good to see that it's slowly starting to come back. Pat Elflein has been a huge help because of that. And also Brian O'Neill starting to play better as well. So hopefully this is a great sign for the running game going forward because it's something that they're going to have in the future.
Yeah, and then the next point there, I think you were the one who brought it to my attention initially, where it looks as though a segment, I don't even know if you want to call it the fan base, because Twitter is small, but, you know, we'll call it a vocal minority on social media, starting to maybe turn on Dalvin Cook a little bit. And, you know, I love Dalvin, Florida State guy, I think he's super talented, but I get it to a degree, you know, hasn't really played a lot. And while he hasn't been playing, you know, last year the offense was spectacular without him. This year, Latavius Murray over the past couple of weeks has been looking, you know, like the best, you know, number two running back maybe in the league. Yeah, it might be a stretch, but it's been looking very good. And it started to erase the small bit of memories of Dalvin that we have out of the minds of some fans. On a scale of 1 to 10, JR, how important is Dalvin Cook to the success of this offense or team?
I would say about a 7, just because I think he's the complete package of what they want in a running back. And he's not just by a committee approach like they're trying to use right now. He's that guy all in one person. He can catch the ball out the backfield, and he can run in a plethora of different ways. But his biggest issue has always been durability, even going back to his days at Florida State. He only missed one game at Florida State, but he battled injuries throughout his career that he did end up playing through. He had multiple shoulder surgeries, and he had some hamstring issues at Florida State as well. So all of these injuries that he's having right now are nothing new besides the torn ACL. He didn't suffer anything of that sort in his time with the Seminoles, but he did have some bumps and bruises throughout his time in college, and it is a bit frustrating. But I think fans need to stay patient with him because he did have a knee injury last year, and the first thing that goes or that hampers players after a severe knee injury is their hamstrings, and they have to let those things heal. You cannot rush hamstrings or it's something that's going to linger for a very long time, and I'm glad the Vikings shut them down until week 11. I believe that's what Courtney Cronin said in her write-up a couple of days ago, that they were going to shut him down until week 11 and just get him back going after the bye week, and we'll see how it goes. Hopefully he's able to stay healthy, but yes, it definitely is frustrating, but fans that are saying they should cut or trade him, I think that's just a bit extreme.
Saxy Prince, scale of 1 to 10, where you at with Dalvin?
Y'all know I love Dalvin. I love me some running backs. I still think that he's important to the team. I say that in the respects of I think that we can still get some explosive plays that we're missing from Dalvin Cook. Not just obviously in the run game, but just overall in the offense. You know, you can find ways to, you know, get him on wheel routes or get him going somewhere in the offense where I think he can be important. You know, our run game can at this point, I think we've seen it can be serviceable, and maybe we don't need more than serviceable. But I think more often than not, more often in this situation, I think the purpose he's going to have within the offense is just to provide another avenue to have explosive plays. And you know, if that's all we get out of him, that's fine. But then obviously we had, you know, in a few years, we'll have to have a much more important conversation of like, do you resign a guy like Dalvin Cook? Whereas, you know, he is a second round pick. He is an explosive player, but you know, if you guys have guys like Mike Boone and Rock Thomas, you know, maybe you don't, maybe you just keep kind of getting these guys, you know, later on undrafted or whatever the case have you. But I do think he does have lead back potential, not just in the run game, but just overall. So I think he still has a purpose here with the Vikings.
Okay.
So I would say 8.
8? Okay. All right. Coming over the top. All right. Saxy Prince, I'm going to stay with you here because obviously, you know, won the game, big score, moved us up some power rankings, but we also had some injuries that were, you know, a little costly. So of everything that happened in the game, which of the injuries that happened has you most concerned going into this next week and, you know, further into the season?
Oh, I think easily it has to be Xavier Rhodes. I don't know if he'll be ready for a few weeks, actually. I would not be surprised if we don't see him until after the bye. And that is what's really going to – you're really going to see – how important it was for those who wanted to trade Mac Alexander, for those who, you know, maybe are still on like, let's trade Trey Waynes or, you know, some of these other guys. You're really going to see the Vikings depth really get tested. Cause now you're rolling with Mac Alexander, Trey Waynes, Holton Hill's probably going to get a lot of run. Marcus Sherrills is probably going to get quite a bit of run. So I think you're going to feel him the most because let's look at this game coming right now, you're facing Saints and Michael Thomas. You're not really going to have a corner of that size that can play with a guy like Michael Thomas, like Xavier Rhodes can. You're probably going to see maybe a few more explosive plays than you're used to seeing because you don't have a guy like that. I think normally what we would say in the past, because I mean, this has been, Arif kind of said it yesterday on the Football Machine, but you know, I kind of agree with it. Harrison Smith has not been having his greatest season to date. And I think he's been exposed a little bit more so than we're used to seeing him exposed in coverage, which doesn't give me as much confidence if, you know, maybe Andrew Sandejo isn't back, when it comes to, like, let's say you put, you know, Harrison Smith over the top of, like, a Holton Hill, or, you know, just to give some more support. I don't necessarily know if that's going to have the desired result that we think that it's going to be until he kind of shows to be, you know, one of the top safeties that he was in the last couple of years. So it's taboo to say, obviously, but I think Xavier Rhodes is that we're going to miss that a lot. And I think we're going to see it very, very early against the Saints.
Okay, so JR, are you kind of riding with Prince on this one in terms of Xavier Rhodes being the biggest concern, or I guess just the secondary depth in general being your biggest concern kind of coming out of this game?
I think it's Anthony Barr.
Woo! Oh, boy.
He gets a lot of grief as far as how he started the year early on, but when Anthony Barr plays well, the Vikings defense plays well. It's no secret. They're using him more as an edge rusher nowadays, but in the box, I think he's played really well. He's been a terror off of the edge. When they do rush him off the edge, he's caused some pressure. He hasn't got home on a lot of plays, but he's creating a lot of havoc and a lot of pressure off of the edge. When he is in the box, he's done a really good job on blitzes and tackling in the box as well. So, and he calls the plays on Sunday. A lot of fans don't really notice that. He's the guy that calls the plays. He wears the green dot on Sundays, and I think having or missing that key piece is going to be really huge for the Vikings if he is not able to play on Sunday. And just think about the depth behind him. You're talking about Eric Wilson, or who knows who was going to replace him. I think Eric Wilson is going to end up being a good player, but he's not the type of player that in the presence that Anthony Barr is, whether that's coming off the edge or being in the box. He's just not that physical specimen like Anthony Barr is in the middle of the Vikings defense. Anthony Barr makes everything go in the middle, and there's a reason why when he makes a bad play, it's so glorified, because he's such an important and a key piece in the middle of that Vikings defense. And when he makes a great play, it's really glorified. It's just because he's such a key piece in the middle of Mike Zimmer's defense. He makes everything go.
Okay. All right. Okay, well, let's move this thing along here. Obviously, we got before we get into the Saints thing, the Saints game, excuse me, we got some good news. Some news that was probably a little unexpected just based on kind of where things seem to have been laid out earlier in the season. But Everson Griffin is back, resumed team activities. And obviously, just, you know, the statement, the press conference, everything handled marvelously, I guess, from my perspective anyway, from by Griffin and kind of the words and actions when he returned. I guess, JR, from your perspective, what does this do for the locker room?
It's huge. The Vikings get their leader back. They get their voice of the defense back, and that's something that they haven't had these past few weeks. Everybody knows that Everson Griffin is not only the voice of that defense, he's the voice of the Minnesota Vikings, and he is the face of that team. When you think about the Minnesota Vikings defense, Everson Griffin is one of the first players that you think of. And, you know, Kirk Cousins has been giving those pregame speeches the past few weeks, but we know the guy who normally gives those speeches is Everson Griffin. And that's just the type of voice that he has and the presence that he has in that locker room. So it'll be great to have him back against the Saints this week.
So you brought it up, and so I just got to ask, I know, because you played, you know, at a high level, and I know that superstition can be something that, like, you know, ends up becoming a thing, and I feel like it becomes even more prevalent the higher up you go in some of these sports. And so, you know, they've been making a thing about it's, you know, the Vikings are 3-0 since Kirk Cousins started doing these pregame speeches. But even in the last telecast, the announcer was like, you could hear it, like, Kirk just didn't really seem to be as into it this go around as he was the first time. Like, it's just not him. It's not as natural for him. With them being on a streak with Kirk Cousins doing these pregame speeches, but Everson also coming back, is this even going to be a question? Like, does superstition run that deep amongst football players at this level? Or is it just, you know, we have our leader back, so he's going to get us fired up for this game?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm a huge superstitious guy. And I mean, if you're 3-0 with something going, keep it going. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Let Kirk keep giving those speeches, no matter if they're cheesy or you don't believe it or not. Just let him keep going with those speeches. And, I mean, he said he practices them in the mirror prior to the game. So just keep letting him do his thing. Hopefully they stay undefeated.
Maybe they can do a duet or something.
Yeah.
Well, Kirk will do one for the cameras, and then Everson can do one on the sidelines or something.
I'm completely fine with that. Completely fine with that.
Okay, yep. But you got to keep it going. Okay, so JR riding with the superstition. And Saxy Prince, from you, how quickly do you expect Everson to get back into kind of the usual swing of things? I know they're talking about easing him back in, but from your perspective, if you were kind of handicapping it, when are we going to see kind of the Everson Griffin that we are accustomed to seeing on the field? Getting the usual amount of snaps that he would have been getting, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I think I envision Everson actually to be rotating a little bit as far as Stephen Weatherly. I don't see any reason why, you know, they need to take it slow. I mean, he's ready to play football. He's ready to play football. And obviously, you know, the gap between Stephen Weatherly and Everson Griffin is pretty high. Like, Everson Griffin is an elite defensive end talent. I would not be surprised if, like, they ease him in this game, maybe not start him, but ease him in. And then, you know, if he's running, he's playing well, he's like, you want to keep going, and, you know, have that be the kind of situation where you don't really pitch count him, but you more or less kind of gauge how he's feeling. I know Everson Griffin is the kind of guy who, you know, if he's playing, he wants to play, you know, but this is going to be one of those things where I think you're going to have to evaluate on the field play and kind of make those decisions, you know, as they're happening. I do kind of want to ask about, we are getting that emotional leader back and whatnot. The last couple of weeks, we've obviously seen Kirk Cousins do, you know, that pregame, you know, talk and be the vocal leader, rouse it up. But I think we can all agree that's not really Kirk Cousins' forte. I think it's becoming very forced. First one was okay, and then the last two, you can tell they've been rehearsed and that he's, you know, he's just trying to be somebody he's not. Whereas a guy like Everson Griffin, obviously there's going to be swearing up the wazoo or whatever the case is, but you can know that it's going to come from a genuine place. And this is something that I think NFL and also fans need to understand is, like, quarterbacks can be leaders without being the rah-rah guy. Kirk doesn't have to be that. Let him be the leader that just gets on the field, elevates the players around him by, you know, just playing lights out. He doesn't have to be the guy. It's not a shot against Kirk Cousins if Everson Griffin's the guy that's, like, breaking the huddle and, you know, firing everybody up before the games, or, you know, maybe we need an offensive touchdown or defensive stop or whatever. And if Everson Griffin is the guy that we rely on as a thing, that's not, in my opinion, that's not a thing against the quarterback. I think you can be a leader in a different kind of way. And I think that Everson Griffin's reinsertion to the team can allow Kirk to be who he is and still remain a leader, you know? So I think that's what his return is really going to help the Vikings with.
Whatever, Prince, you just wanted to take shots at Kirk Cousins.
I mean, we did establish I'm a racist. So.
Yeah, that is true. We established that a long time ago. This was just really a recap on that lesson that we'd already learned many
years
ago.
Yeah, because you can't just be a racist once. I mean, that has to be
habitual. No. You're habitually racist. It's okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get to it. And we're playing the Saints, and I read it somewhere, but it's true. Starting to feel like the Saints are in our division with as often as we've been matching up with them here of late. JR, what are the key matchups in this game that you're really going to be looking at? What do the Vikings need to do to maybe pull out a victory in a less miraculous fashion this time around?
Yeah, so the things that I'm going to be looking for is how the Vikings receivers match up against the Saints secondary. Their secondary is a little banged up, and they did acquire some depth getting Eli Apple. I don't think that's going to be much help. He's just really there to be like a leg saver or have some more depth there at cornerback. I don't expect him to play much this week, or if at all, honestly, because I don't know if they're going to trust him with limited practice time in the playbook against two of the best wide receivers in the entire NFL in Diggs and Thielen. So we'll see how that ends up going. We'll see if Marshawn Lattimore does shadow Thielen or Diggs. We know that's been a mystery every week. Patrick Peterson a couple weeks ago did end up shadowing Diggs. So that, like I said, that's been a mystery every week. Which receiver our team's number one corner going to match up against or shadow weekly? And that's something Adam Thielen has been feasting on, because Stephon Diggs has been getting a lot of attention because he plays on the outside and Thielen is in the slot. So that matchup is definitely something that I'll be looking forward to. And also the Vikings defensive line against the Saints offensive line, with Everson Griffin being back, he's primarily going to be matched up against Terron Armstead. And he's had his way against Armstead the past few matchups. And we'll see if Danielle Hunter ends up playing right defensive end or left defensive end. For the most part, he's been playing left defensive end in Everson Griffin's absence, because that's where the Vikings' primary pass rusher does go. But I think they'll probably interchange those guys throughout the game, and we'll see a mixture of Stephen Weatherly in there as well. So their edge rushers have to come to play, because if you try to blitz Drew Brees a bit too much and rely on your banged-up secondary playing man coverage against these guys, I think it's going to be a long day. So they have to get home with those front four and try to create some turnovers and get Drew Brees off his spots.
Yeah, JR, who is the Saints' nickel? Do you know that off the top of your head?
I do not know that off the top of my head.
It's not Ken Crawley, is it? Or is he their actual outside starting
corner? Yeah, he's their other outside guy. I'm not sure who that nickel is.
Yeah, that's probably not a good sign then. Sounds like Adam Thielen might be going for 200 in this game.
That would be nice.
That would be nice. That would be nice. And, you know, Prince, we talked about it a little bit, but you mentioned Xavier Rhodes being out is something that you are concerned about. How are you matching up? If it's you kind of calling the shots defensively there, how are you matching up? Let's pretend our guys are going to be shadowing specific players from the Saints. How are you matching our guys up in this game to get us the kind of the optimal matchups with Xavier Rhodes potentially not playing in this game?
Yeah, because I would put Xavier Rhodes obviously on Michael Thomas, because I think that's a really good matchup size wise and just like, you know, as far as technical skills, I think they match up really well. And obviously you put, you know, Trey Waynes on Ted Ginn. So you really eliminate the speed that's there. And then the other guy that I've talked about, because I think it's something the Vikings really need to key on, because I've watched how the Saints have used him, how Sean Payton has used him, Taysom Hill. I think he's not a quarterback. He's just a really good offensive weapon, and they're using him a lot in the red zone. And potentially not having Anthony Barr, I think, is going to be problematic, because I think as far as a guy who could match up with a guy like that, Anthony Barr would be that guy. I would worry very much so, because I don't think Eric Kendricks can handle with Taysom Hill, especially in the red zone. So it is going to be a little bit of a shakeup. I worry. I don't want to put Trey Waynes on Michael Thomas. So I'm going to keep Trey Waynes on Ted Ginn. I'm probably going to put, you know, Holton Hill on Michael Thomas. You can tell how I'm exactly, Jason. That's exactly what I'm feeling on the inside. And then obviously keeping McKenzie Alexander in the slot. And I think that's your best chance to, you know, if you are going to slow down, I'm putting that in quotes, Michael Thomas is probably your best opportunity to do that. But I just worry about Holton Hill just being so young, and then Michael Thomas being able to feast on that. So I just don't think there's a winning strategy here with having Xavier Rhodes out, but I do think that might be your best way to slow things down. And then obviously just have, you know, Eric Kendricks kind of, you know, key on Alvin Kamara.
Okay. All right. And JR, if it's you now. So we got Prince out there kind of calling the shots on defense. Offensively, because, you know, Reef looks to be on his way back. If Reef is back healthy, how are you configuring the offensive line going into this game?
Well, just the tackle situation. You put Reef at left tackle, and you keep letting the young fella figure it out at right tackle and Brian O'Neill, and then you use Rashad Hill as the swing guy. So now you've created depth at that position, and you have starting experience with all three of those guys. And if one of them start to struggle, whoever Cam Jordan lines up over, then you're able to interchange Rashad Hill and just bring him in at certain points. Let's say Riley Reiff isn't healthy, or if Brian O'Neill is struggling mightily, Rashad Hill has experience at both of those spots to where you can bring him in off the bench.
Sorry, I think I might have, my headphones might have been a little off there, but I'm sorry. Could you go back and tell us who'd be starting at the tackles again? Sometimes I don't be hearing stuff so good.
You just want me to hear me say Brian O'Neill again.
Oh, yeah, that's what it was. That's
yeah. He's been much better than I thought he would be at this point. And at this point, you just let him try to figure it out. and you deal with those bumps and bruises in that trial and error period, because he's going to be your right tackle of the future, and you just keep continue to let him figure it out at that spot.
Awesome. And I know it's early. Is there a Brian O'Neill type of guy in this upcoming draft? Maybe someone who's not first round ready, some tools that maybe the Vikings would be able to pick up in the second or third round and kind of stash behind Reef and train him up to be the left tackle of the future? You seen anybody out there like that we can fall in love with in this process?
Well, this guy will probably end up going in the first round. I like him a lot right now. His name is Yadni Kajust. He's from West Virginia, and he's played left tackle and right tackle, very athletic. He's number 55, and he's protecting Will Greer, who's the quarterback for West Virginia right now. He's protecting his blind side. Very athletic. I think he'll probably end up going in the first round, but he could be one of those guys that goes early on day two as well.
All right. I like it. Guess, do either of you have any other like really key points that you wanted to bring out, you know, about this game? I guess last thing I wanted to ask you guys here is, if this game turns into a full-fledged track meet, what's your level of comfort, JR, that Kirk will be able to keep up with Breeze and go kind of, you know, shot for shot in this sort of environment with the future Hall of Famer?
I think it would be just fine, just because the Vikings have the weapons to be able to sustain in that type of game now. And after that Packers game, he really proved to me that he was able to compete and overtake teams in these types of games or shootouts because of Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen. He has those surroundings to where he can get in those shootouts, and he has those elite weapons on the perimeter to help him overcome his deficiencies to where he can just lob the ball up in any type of circumstances, and those guys could come down with it.
All right. Okay. That's it, guys. I think we made it. We got all the way through. Last thing here, obviously, Sexy Prince. You know, I need that bold prediction, and I need your score prediction.
I think this is going to be a really, really close game. But I do think the Vikings are going to come on top. I'm to the tune of 31-30 Vikings. And I think it's going to be a game-winning field goal. Dan Bailey is going to hit a 62-yard field goal for the win.
My goodness. My goodness. I'm sorry. So can you give me that score again?
31-30.
Okay. For the Vikings, Dan Bailey's
Drew Brees. Drew Brees is going to go up late. He's going to get that touchdown. It's going to be 30-28. Vikings drive it down the field. You know, all hope is lost. Rely on Bailey. He drills a 62-yard field goal.
Okay. All right. AR. It's going deep into the special teams for the bold prediction. I like it. What you got, man?
I think this is going to be a shootout as well. I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. I'm going to go Vikings 34, Saints 31. I think Kirk Cousins throws 4 touchdowns. That's my bold prediction.
Okay. I'm with you guys. I think this is going to be a high-scoring, close game. I am going to go 31-28 Vikings. And in this game, we are going to have a surprise big game from none other than the dad runner, Kyle Rudolph. He will break 100 yards and have a touchdown. I don't know if he's done that anytime recently. When was the last time Kyle? I'm gonna have to look that up. See when the last time Kyle Rudolph went over 100. I feel like he's going over 100 in this game and getting a touchdown. So there we go.
Oh, that's big right there.
Hey, it's gonna be a slow 100, but it'll get there. It'll get there.
No yards after the catch.
I mean, hey, JR, he is I can't remember what it was the last time they were telling us. 9th in the league amongst tight ends in yards after the catch.
Wow.
Which sounds impressive until you look at who the tight ends are in the league after Kelsey, really, and Kittle. And it's not that great. But anywho, Kyle's going to have a big game and a touchdown. There we go. JR, What you working on? Anything that people should be looking out for? Any upcoming projects? Anything you want to plug, let folks know about?
Nothing right now. I'm still working on the 2019 draft guide. I've been tweeting out some draft notes the past few days because my followers seem to like that a lot, finding out some little nuggets that I find out about draft prospects as I'm doing research on them. So just be on the lookout for that. Also, Purple for the Win is up with Andy Carlson. Make sure you guys go check that out.
Yes, sir. And Saxy Prince. I mean, yeah, no, we know you did some work today. Tell us a little bit about it and where we can find it.
Yeah, it was surprising because multiple people had dropped something similar to it. But I kind of dove into the last 6-7 games and just kind of looked at, like, just, you know, I posed a question. Does Kirk Cousins have a tell? You know, does he have a consistent, like, rhythmic pattern that allows defenses to start keying into him, which, you know, he's kind of leading the league or one of the league leaders in batted balls on at the line of scrimmage. So I kind of looked at several plays. I have a bunch of GIFs that are posted onto it. And I attempted to answer the question, but I also kind of left it a little bit open-ended as far as, like, you know, there is an issue with batted balls at the line of scrimmage. I think Kirk's two biggest issues right now are, you know, fumble issues and then, you know, batted balls. So I'm just trying to figure out ways that we can, you know, figure it out, because I'm sure they've talked about it in their meetings. But yeah, I just kind of put, you know, pen to paper and put that out today.
All right. Y'all check that out. That will be in the show notes. And yeah, as always, we will retweet the Purple for the Win featuring JR as soon as it is launched, hopefully over the weekend, maybe tomorrow, who knows, at some point in the not too distant future. I hope to put an update to the article I did over the, I guess in the off season about defining a franchise quarterback. Our friends at Pro Football Focus have made it way easier to dig into their data. So I've gone with a bigger data set this time. Use the conversation that we had with Jake Anderson, Evan Silva, Peter Howard, and some others last week about some of the factors that those guys thought were important in terms of what it means to be a franchise quarterback. And so I'm going to pull all that information together, throw up another quick article, and I'll be yelled at by the internet for ranking people's quarterbacks too low. But yeah, some interesting things there, I guess, from my nerdy perspective, and I hope to get that out to folks here before too long. And then so that will be focused on the past, so 2013 through 2017, and then after we get through week 8 I will look to update it for the current season. So yeah, that's it, that's all, listeners. As always, thank you for sticking with us here. Also, hopefully he's still listening, but I want to give out a shout out to Graham Rouse. Graham hit us up with some very nice comments on Podbean. The app was being very, very difficult, and so I was having some challenges writing back. But Graham, I did want to let you know that we did see that comment, see those comments, excuse me, and we are very appreciative and thankful that you do listen to all of the shows and all of our listeners. We are very thankful to all of you for riding with us and listening to all these shows. But that's it for today. JR, Prince, thanks for riding with me here. And yeah, listeners, we'll talk to you soon. Have a good one.